My guy.
My guy.
How are you, bro?
Yeah, all good. And yourself?
Nah, not too bad, my also. Bro, got you on the potty here, man. It's probably your second podcast now, eh?
Yeah, second one. Yeah, the other one had to be over Zoom due to the climate of everything, but... Yeah. Nah, appreciate you.
Well, we're just rebellious here, bro.
Yeah, that's it. I love it. Love it, bro. Nah, love
jokes,
it.
Jokes. It's actually we're doing this at the right time, you know, with the levels and all that, eh? Yeah. So we're all good.
As confusing as they are, we get this part.
Levels in, levels eh? Like,
yeah. Bro, levels in, levels out, who knows?
Yeah. Nah, but bro, just so our viewers know, what's your name, bro? And give us a little bit of background on who you are and where you're from also.
Sweet, bro. So I'm Luke for everyone out there. I'm originally from South Africa. I get asked if I'm Māori or Islander heaps. I don't know why. It's probably because I'm so small or something. I don't know. Originally from South Africa. We moved to New Zealand when I was 9. Came over here with my family. Went to Birkdale Primary, so from Beach Haven, so Valleyon, all the boys out there. But yeah, went to Beach Haven and then went to Birkdale Intermediate, ended up at Northcote College somehow. Don't ask me why, but ended up there. Loved it because all I did was go to school for lunch and sports, so we're on. And then, ended up, on the shore, been on the shore for most of my life. Experienced the south side a little bit. It wasn't for me, so came back to the shore with the family. Recently married.
That's the one.
Yeah, we got married. Got married at the beginning of this year. Never thought that would happen. But
marriage life, bro.
Yeah. Never thought that would happen, but hey, we're here now, and 9 months later, I think it is. Probably going to get in trouble for not knowing the exact time, but that's me, eh?
Ah, awesome, man. It's good to have you on the show anyway, bro. Real interesting interesting story, eh, that you have and that you got to share, man. I listened to the last podcast you're on, man. Shout out to the bro on there. Do you want to give him a quick shout out as well?
Yeah, bro. Shout out to Dave and the Fallon show. Yeah, appreciate you fellas having me.
So, I remember when I listened to that one, bro, and just to hear your story, it was awesome, man. Yeah. And so I thought I'd get you on this one, eh? And Maddie's been telling me to get you on as well. So. Actually, bro. So, it's just awesome to have you on, bro. And I reckon we get straight into it, eh? Yeah. And let's talk about your journey, your story. Obviously, it's pretty much out there now that
bro.
You know, you found out that you're adopted, or whangai, I guess.
Yeah.
And so for many people, you know, who have been through it, can be a bit of a surreal experience, and something that I can't imagine, relate to or experience. Mm. So, bro, do you just want to talk about, you know, the start and then, what you went through, bro, with all of it?
Yeah, bro. So, I was actually the age of 13. I remember chilling at home in my room, and it was me and my old man. Because at the time, the PC of the house was in my room because I had the biggest room because my sister moved out. So, bonuses there, being the young one. But, he was chilling in my room, and he just one day randomly out of nowhere. So when I got my first phone as well, the Nokia 3310, Snake.
Is that the brick phone?
Yeah.
That's the one that I used to have too, G.
Snake. Well, I was jamming Snake, and he goes to me, "Son, random question, but do you know what adoption is?" And I was like, "Hey." And then just explained what I seen off movies. I was like, you don't really have a home, and people like take you in, and then they come and see you and see if they want to take you into their household type thing. And he was like, "Okay." And then said nothing after, and I was like, "Hey, that was random ass."
Is like, that all?
Why did you ask me that? Like,
he's testing your IQ, bro. He was testing what Northcote taught you.
Nothing, because I didn't listen. It wasn't their fault. It was my fault. But anyway, the next day he went off to work, did the easy job, and then my mum called me into the room, and she was like, "Son, you remember the question your dad asked you yesterday?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah." She was like, "Well, you're that. You're adopted." And I was in my head.
Did they say it just like that? Literally.
And I don't blame them because, to be honest, after having the conversation with my mum, she didn't know how to tell me, bro. Like, there had been no education around, this is how you need to say it, this is when you need to say it. I was just like, "You're adopted, son. Yay." And for me, at first, I was like, all good. And then it sunk in, and I was like, oh, like, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, how did that come about?
At what point did it like sink in for you, bro, that, you know?
I think it would have been probably about a week later. I just started high school, actually, so I just started year 9 at Northcote, and one of the boys were like, bro, like, I was just real not myself, because I'm a quite out there person, quite like to be the clown out of the group, but
yeah.
I was just not myself that day, and one of the boys were like, bro, are you all good? And I said to him, oos, like, I got told I was adopted, and I don't know how to feel about it. But then when I actually got to process it myself, it was a lot of negative stuff that really took over my thinking. And I started thinking, like, why didn't my real parents want me? What is it about me that they didn't like? Or, you know, like, because at this time I didn't really know much of the information about what happened and how it happened, you know. I was just, you're adopted.
Oh, right. So mum and dad didn't actually, like, say,
nah.
Oh, this is what happened. This is how we, you know, adopted you, yeah. Et cetera. Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah, because it's interesting in our culture, like, talking isn't a big thing. It's like, this is it, sweet, deal with it type thing. There's no, yeah, back in the day, you know, like a lot of old school people or people that have old school parents can relate to this. It's like, yeah, bro, just get over it, you know, move on. But it actually affected me massively mentally. It brought up a lot of questions that I was like, where do I even start? I was like, who do I even ask, to be honest? And so, yeah, it was a bit of a process for me and trying to figure out where to go from there, to be honest. And then actually, once I made first 15 and stuff and started playing rugby, more and more parties came up.
Yeah.
And I used those parties to forget about the feelings that I was feeling.
Right, so escape.
Yeah, escape. Yeah, so I was trying to escape. And that's when I started getting into alcohol hard out. And that's also when I started getting into drugs to try and take away this emptiness that I was feeling. And I would always look for, like, clarity within people. I was like, bro, if they don't like me, I have to make sure they like me.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, if you don't like me, you don't like me, you know. Not everyone's going to like me. I like to think I'm a likable guy, but who knows, you know. I mean, must be doing something right in your life. You know, but, yeah, it was an interesting journey, man. Like, especially being so young and not knowing how to process and not knowing how to deal with emotion was tough.
So, you know, after that first chat and you're saying that, you know, it finally sunk in a week later and all that. I guess, that was at the beginning of high school.
Yeah.
Now you've skipped to, you know, first 15 and all that.
Yeah.
So I presume that's not the same. You weren't in year 9, were you?
No.
So it was in year 11, year 12 or something?
Yeah,
like
year 11, year 12.
Right. So there's obviously a big time frame from when you were first told to then. Like, did the conversation ever come up, you know, in between that? Or
to be honest, for years it didn't. It didn't come up.
Do you know why?
When I did try and bring it up with my dad, there was a bit of, like, hesitation in the answer, and I'm not too sure about the full story behind it, but I feel like there was a part of him that thought I might see him not as my father, you know, but shout out to Pops, that's my dad, you know, Mario.
Good old
Mario.
Mario! House renovations.
hey, quick little shout out. Trouble. Hey. I think there was how do you come back from that one?
Oh, man, I remember when I first met your daddy and he goes, oh, good to meet you. And I was like, and next thing that comes out of his mouth, hey, it was just, here's my business card.
But I promoted himself, guy. Yeah, he doesn't even know you, but I don't know you, but business baby.
Hey, business baby.
I'm out here trying to make moolah. Damn.
But yeah.
I'll use your friend's son. Thanks.
Oh, bro. So anyway, yeah, we're talking about, you know, obviously, that big time frame and, you know, why they didn't, you know, obviously tell you, and you're obviously not really sure. Why?
Yeah, and to be honest also, I didn't know who to ask and where to start, really.
Yeah.
So, like, I kind of just put it to the back of my head. I was just trying to look at it from a positive light.
Yeah.
But I found myself doing things that I wouldn't normally do if I hadn't known that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So, again, got into the drugs and alcohol and partying and just trying to use anything I could to try and take away this feeling of, like, rejection. Like,
yeah,
there was, like, my mates would cancel on me because it's like an important family thing, and I would take it so hard. I'd be like, oh,
bro,
stuff you then, like, you know. But it was just my own insecurity, bro. Yeah. Like, it made me realize that actually it was me that was just insecure. Like, it was important. Like, one of the boys cancelled on me for a tangi, bro, and I got mad at him, and I was like, what's wrong with you, bro? Like, that's his family, and he's got a tangi. Like, are you stupid?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I realized it was my insecurity from, you know, being adopted and stuff like that. And yeah, again, being in high school, I didn't know how to process that. I didn't even know it was a thing, even just within our South African culture. Like, you don't, it's not a big thing to talk.
Yeah.
So learning to talk was, you know, having boys around me and even some girl mates around me that just knew how to talk. And so they kind of taught me on that, took me on that journey, as well as teachers at school. I had some good teachers at school that really saw potential in me that I never saw. And so they really backed me even when I put myself in the deepest holes and should have been kicked out of school. They were the ones that actually fought for me to be involved because they saw my potential.
Yeah,
and I appreciate them for that because, yeah, when I didn't see it, they saw it and they did what they needed to do. And especially my dean, and when I did year 14.
Did you actually?
Yeah,
I did no year way. 14.
Yeah.
So you repeated?
Yeah, I repeated to get my English and maths credits.
Okay, yeah.
And my dean at the time.
You didn't do the whole year or you did?
No, I did the whole year, like, I did half a year in class and then the other half was just sport.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. That makes sense.
She backed me hard out.
Wow.
She backed me hard out with that and gave me the opportunity because I had to actually go in for an interview. They were like, why do you want to come back? You had like 5 years. Why do you want to come for a 6 year? You're just going to muck around again. So I kind of had to go through like this contract process.
Yeah.
To make sure that I turn up to the classes that I signed up for and that type of thing. So, yeah, they definitely fought for me, and it was interesting.
Oh, well, and that's where teachers like them, you know, the ones that supported you, you know, that's where, you know, those are the teachers you want in your school and stuff, eh, bro? So that's real cool to hear.
I feel like we don't see enough of that these days, eh?
Yeah.
It's more about the, I'm here for education, that's it. You know, and I'm not saying that's all teachers, but I feel like, it can be a bit more flexibility around, you know, caring a bit more about the students. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool to hear, man. My other question is, you know, when you went through that phase of you know, escaping through the drugs and alcohol and all that, and, you know, turning to your mates and all that, at any point did you find out any of your mates were adopted as well, or
that not the case? None of my mates were adopted, but, like, a lot of my mates had families that were associated with gangs and stuff. And so one of the boys actually got me involved with his family because I was looking for a way to make money, and I started getting involved with them, and, you know, I was slanging. Yeah. But I didn't realize what I was slanging with and who for and that type of thing. Till later on, I found out there was, like, a gang affiliations and they were using the young fellas to slang, and I wasn't complaining. I was making some easy money.
Yeah.
Because I got pocket money, but I was like, I was a big eater, bro, and I was like, I need some money for a feed. Like, $5-$10 ain't gonna do it for me. But I just try to find different ways of taking my mind off it, and that was one of the ways, because you always had to watch your back.
Yeah.
And so that in itself just took my head off the fact that I was adopted, that there was this rejection, there was this unloved feeling that I had and stuff like that. So that took my mind off the whole situation for a while, until, you know, and even with the drugs and alcohol, until you sobered up and got all those feelings back, it made me realize, like, these are going to be here forever until I deal with it, you know.
Yeah.
I can do anything I want to try and take that pain away, but it's temporarily, you know, however you say that word.
Yeah.
It's temporary, you know, and for me it was
there you go.
Thanks. Northcote Education.
Not your temporarily.
Shout out to Northcote.
Year 14, baby.
Let's go. Ningaro, let's go.
Oh, man.
But it was just, it was a short-term solution, that's for sure. And I try to go down that path, even though I knew it wasn't getting me anywhere.
Right.
But it was that short-term feelings that helped me get through it.
Yeah. It's almost like the short-term gratification too, eh? You know, when you're saying, you know, I think that's where a lot of people do get trapped, you know.
Yeah.
It's like they see the money, the quick money that they can make, eh? And then, you know, it becomes a trap.
Yeah.
You know? And obviously that's what it sounds like to me, you know. It's like you got caught in that.
Yeah, bro.
That phase, bro, you know, where you're just seeing this. You're obviously living life, bro. You're making more money than your peers around you. And, you know, I mean, you can afford, you know, say, you know, $100 pair of shoes, $200 pair of shoes, bro. Whereas the other bros, they're struggling. You're like, why would I stop, eh?
Yeah, it became about the materialistic things, bro.
Right, yeah.
Instead of the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I got caught. You're so right. Also, I got caught up in that trap and I was flaunting myself, you know, had all the best gears, the latest gears. Mm. But deep down inside.
Still do.
I wish to be skinny. I got caught up in that trap and I realized that there's nothing more important than actually having a hold on, like, your life and actually being awkward mentally, and that it's okay to talk about where you're at. Because I let that stuff control me so much that I started being ugly to people, bro.
Yeah.
And I even, like, started being rude to my best mate that his family took me in. And, you know, they would let me stay there every time I got there. The first thing they would ask is, are you hungry, you know? Like, that type of thing. They had that unconditional love for me. But then I got into this space where I just hated people, bro.
Yeah.
Because I felt like the world was against me. Because the thought that kept crossing my mind was, if my real parents want me, who else would want me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if they don't want me, why would anyone else care?
Did you ever sit back at one point, and I know it's hard to do this when you're young, I guess, you know, for a lot of young people, but did you ever sit back and realise that you know, your parents today, you know, that they were there for you the whole time? You know, like...
Nah, bro. Really? I didn't, like, for me, in my head, it was, like, exactly what I said before, like, if my birth parents don't want me, why would anyone else care?
Yeah.
It became a selfish mentality. I was like, I didn't care about
anyone. That's a good way of saying it, you know, selfish, yeah.
I didn't care about anyone else around me. I was like, if I go, no one's going to care.
Yeah.
If I go, like, no one's going to mourn for me. No one's going to even notice that I'm gone. And it was actually, bro, I went to a party one night. And the boys hadn't seen me for a couple of months because I was involved with the wrong people and stuff like that. So I isolated my mates and my family and stuff because I didn't want them to be involved with what I was involved in.
Yeah.
And so I actually went to a party one night and I got wasted and smoked as much as I could and blacked out.
Yeah.
And one of the boys that I was real close with actually took me home with him. And what clicked for me was when he went to work and his mum came in the room and she slapped me and she was like, you little, what are you doing, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what did I do? And she's like, you know, I see you as a son, hey, like, you're part of this household too. And I was like, hey, and she just started bawling her eyes out, bro.
Wow.
And it was in that moment that I realized people actually cared. It was in that moment that I realized the parents that I have now love me unconditionally. It was in that moment that I realized I have people around me wanting the best for me and really supporting me.
Yeah.
And I had to do a lot of work to get out of that mindset of that selfish mindset, you know, of it's just about me. If I go, it doesn't matter, you know. I'm going to affect people around me was the realization. And it took about 3 or 4 years to get to that realization. But, you know, I had to learn the hard way, unfortunately, going through getting hidings on the street.
Yeah,
you know, while I was slanging, you're getting jumped there when I'm by myself, you know, carloads would pull up and I'd get jumped and all of that, you know, the fun stuff, yay. you know,
yeah.
And when that was happening, I was like, is this the life I want? Is this really what I want to wake up and do every day? You know, and I came to the realization and I was like, nah, this isn't what I want. And there was... people around me at church as well, like my youth pastor at the time and stuff, that really like supported me hard out.
Yeah.
Because I started going to youth and stuff. I'd go to youth like drunk and high. Sorry, sorry Pastor Brandlinder. But one thing that caught me about the church was that there were so many young people there that had similar stories to what I had, but they could turn up there every Friday night, or at the time it was Thursday night, and just smile, bro. And just be themselves and be happy. And for me, I hadn't seen that in a long time.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, I was like, ooh, I want that. You know, like I want to be able to still feel what I'm feeling and process that, but also be able to smile and actually appreciate people and the friendships I have around me. Mm. Whereas before, I was just stuffing them up, doing like hurting the people closest to me and taking money and not paying them back and all of that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, again, I fell into that trap of like, I want the best stuff, so I will do anything at any cost to make sure I get it. Yeah, bro, and shucks.
Hey, how time changes, and you know what I mean, with learning. But, you know, you just mentioned, you know, like, you know, it wasn't until you went through hardship, you know, and you were told, you know, that isn't the life that you're supposed to be living and stuff, you know, that's when the real learning happens, though. You know, you've got to go through difficult situations in order for, you know.
Bro.
I recently read this book, and it was The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F-U-C-K.
Yeah.
And
that's it, guys.
In the book, bro, it was like, you know, people need to choose the difficult situations they want to go through, pretty much. And so, for example, you know, if you're a professional athlete, well, then the difficult decisions you've got to make is, do I want to go to train and train, you know, 5-6 days a week, that type of thing. Or, you know, if you want to be a lawyer, do I want to go to uni for 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is, you know, that it takes, you know, and put in the long hours of study in order to become a lawyer, you know? So you've got to choose your difficult situations, you know? You chose it, obviously, at the beginning, but realize, bro, it isn't the right one, you know?
It's not easy, eh?
Yeah.
And I like how you say choice, because, like, I had a choice in that moment to continue doing what I was doing and living that life, or actually to change it around and make something of my life.
Yeah.
Because for me, like, after that experience, I believe it doesn't matter what background you come from. It's a choice you make that makes you go to where you want to be.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, I had to make a hard, well, it wasn't that hard, because I was like, to be honest, I'm sick of getting hidings and going back to the pad with a broken nose or black eye. I'm black enough as it is, you know. Like,
yes, you are.
So I was like, yeah, nah, I'm not keen. Like, And so, I made the choice to start getting into sport. Like, my sport was boxing and league. And to be honest, boxing taught me a lot of discipline that that helped me control my anger, because I was a very angry person as well. And then league, like jamming league as well, I was just like throwing my body in there. If I got smoked, laughed at it, got back up, like, yeah, solid, bro, mean hit. Just annoy them even more, you know.
Yeah,
I was that guy that, you know, if you hit me, gee, solid, all sweet. But yeah, it just taught me what it was to, like, it humbled me. It humbled me in a lot of ways. You know, my first boxing fight, I got smoked, humbled me. My first league game when I was under 15s and Tigers woke me up, but I was still doing what I was doing. And then I started jamming Point Chev. Shout out to the boys. But yeah, jam Point Chev, bro. And I played a handful of games, not too many, but, you know, those games just humbled me, because it showed me, like, I can't just rock up somewhere and just take a position. You've got to earn it.
Yeah.
That just humbled me and showed me a lot and taught me a lot about leadership.
Yeah, good.
Just being in leadership at church as well. Maddie knows my journey, you know. There's been ups and downs, some massive ups and some massive downs, bro. And those are the things you've got to learn from, bro.
Yeah.
And so I see failure as an opportunity to learn, not as the end of the world, so, you know.
Quote, Luke Letterman.
No, stolen. Yeah, stolen. But yeah, no, I definitely see it as an opportunity. And it's not easy. Like, it's easier said than done to see your failures as opportunity to learn. But sometimes you just got to do it, bro. Like, just suck it up and do it. And, you know, it's not easy. But as long as you keep putting one foot in front of the other, you'll be all good.
Yeah, that's the one, bro. Yeah, I think I want to go back to you know, the story of when you did get, when you found out you were adopted.
Yeah.
like we haven't given any context around, you know, like how it all started, where you were adopted from, why it happened and all that. And I mean, do you want to explain, like, you know, where it all started in terms of, you know, your parents to where you were found, or, you know, and stuff like that, bro?
Yeah, well, so it's interesting. I actually had this conversation with my mum the other day. And she was actually at a church camp with, like, the ladies of the church. And one of my aunties was a social worker. She's now in England. But, yeah, she was a social worker, and she had this case, and it was my case. So they were looking for a home for me because I was – so the family I was with, I was causing problems because my birth dad had an affair with another lady. And so the family loved me unconditionally, but – yeah, it was just causing problems in the family. And then my mum and dad were actually, like I said, my mum was away. And then my nana, my mum's mum, she rang up my dad and was like, hey, look, like, there's a kid here, like, that's up for adoption. Like, are you guys interested? Because, yeah, my mum went through her journey with having kids and it didn't quite work out. And so, because they've always wanted a son and a daughter, they had my sister and they were just looking for a son. And so, my dad, like, said, oh, we'll just wait till my mum gets back from the camp, and then they'll talk about it and come see me and stuff. And then actually the other, so my auntie had to hand over the case because there was that whole conflict of interest.
Oh, right.
Because, yeah, like, family, it was my mum's sister and stuff, sister-in-law. So it was, like, the whole conflict of interest. So she had to actually hand the case over, but she handed it over to one of her good mates.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay. She actually, so I was at this home where I was being kept with a lot of other adopted people and other adopted kids and stuff like that.
Like a foster home?
Yeah, like a foster home. And so they asked if they could actually come see me first before they made a decision. And they weren't actually meant to go, but the social, because they were with the social worker, was okay. And so they came to come see me. And that was on the Wednesday, so the Wednesday after the Sunday night of my mum getting back from that camp.
Right.
So they rang, my nana rang my dad on the Saturday. My mum got home on the Sunday, and they got to see me on the Monday. Got to see me on that Monday, and came to come hang out with me, meet me, and then by the Wednesday, they went to go sign the papers.
Wow.
And
how old were you here? How old were you at this point?
I was... I think my mom said I was like 2 months old, maybe, if that. And I think she said the hardest thing for her was the family I was with. They struggled to give me up as well. Like, because it was like my birth dad's family that was looking after me. Wow. But I was in between their house and like this foster home. And she said the hardest thing was seeing all the love they had for me. But to take that away from them, you know. It was hard for her, but my mom also said, like, the only way we're going to take this child is if we don't have to give him back. Because in the agreement, there was, because my mom was, my birth mom was still around, and she still knew who I was, and I'm pretty sure she came to come visit me and stuff. But my mom said, like, the only way I'm doing this adoption is if he's going to be ours. Like, that's it. There's no... 10 years down the track, I want my son back type thing. And so in order for that to happen, it had to be a closed adoption, which meant they weren't able to get any information about my birth mother or any information that they thought I would ask for. Wow. I would have to go to the social worker myself to get that information.
Right.
So it was just no details from that side and no details from where I'm getting adopted to. And then... yeah, if I wanted to know any information, I would have to go back myself physically to get that information.
Why do they do that, bro? What do you know? What is it because
the reason they had to do that is because so that with a closed adoption, it meant that my mum couldn't come back, like my birth mum couldn't come back,
and take me. Oh,
you
right.
know, so okay. that I was legally there, like my parents. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was the safest thing to do, and like especially for my mum, like protecting her heart and protecting my parents. To make sure that I'm with them, you know, for the rest of my life, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that, it was interesting. It also showed me, and it helped me understand why my mum was also so hard on me because she went through a lot to get me.
Yeah, well, that's right.
yeah, 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 so yeah, yeah. it changed my perspective, and I think it strengthened my relationship with my mum, because there was a period where me and my mum would clash for so long. Yeah. I think it was about 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. Before me and my mum actually got into talking terms, and then, like, yeah, we would talk, but it was like every little thing we would clash on.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand it, but I was like, oh, good, just keep going with it. I'm sweet.
Yeah.
Like, thinking it's normal.
Yeah.
But as I got older, I was like, that's not all good, you know? And, once she told me the story, I started figuring out and putting the pieces together. Oh, that's why you were so hard on me, or that's why you told me this, you know? It makes sense now. Only took me 27 years, you know? But I guess sometimes it just takes that maturity for you to actually get why your parents do what they do sometimes, eh?
That's
and,
right.
And sometimes they're not always open about it, but they know in their heart of hearts why they did what they did. And yeah, bro, my family went through a lot to get me, and I understand why they were so so hard on me to make something of my life, because, you know, there could have been questions or people telling them stuff like, oh, this and that. I'm not too sure about it, but I know that when I came into the family, I was loved. But again, I was blinded by that through the darkness that took over my thinking, really.
So from 2 months, you know, you obviously bought from South Africa straight to New Zealand?
No
time that you were there? No,
I was in South Africa for 9 years. So at the age of nine, we came over.
Yeah.
Big change. Didn't even know New Zealand existed, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then the intriguing thing for me was different cultures.
Yeah.
Because in South Africa, you have your blacks, your whites, your colors, and your Indians. And so you know your people group, because there was a whole lot of separation back in the day that I won't get into, because that's
all past the segregation my time. And stuff. Yeah, apartheid. Yeah.
Yeah, apartheid. That's my parents' era, so I can't really say much about that. But yeah, for me, like coming to New Zealand, just being exposed to so many different cultures, man, it blew my mind. I was like, oh, there's Samoans, there's Māori. So what's that? But bro, fell in love with the Māori culture. Even got to lead a haka at primary school, which was cool, because I was the only brown fella in my class. But all good, I'll take it. Oh, I might get fired if I do that. Yeah, bro, so the opportunities that I got in New Zealand was endless, eh? And opportunities I never thought I could get, but much love to my parents, eh? They did what they had to do to get me where I am today and make me the person I am today, bro.
Nice, bro. I think my follow-up question to that is, has there been any rekindling with your biological parents or family?
Nah, none at all. For me, it was just knowing what happened, because... as I said to you before, my bro, like, my parents are my parents, and I love them unconditionally. And like I said, they did what they needed to do to get me where I am today. And I'll forever be grateful for that.
Do you think you will? You would take that step?
To be honest, I'm not really phased, eh? Like, for me now, I've got, like I said before, I'm freshly married, so trying to start my own legacy and start my own family and, you know, hopefully be a good father for my kids one day in the future. Nice. And that's my goal now. That's my motivation, is, you know, and the father I have now, he's been an awesome father to me, and I just want to back that up and be a better father than he was, because that's what he always tells me. He's like, you know, I've been a good father, but I want you to be better than I was. And, you know, that's the goal now.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, bro. Well, obviously, like, you know, with the challenges you've been through, you know, going through the adoption, going into obviously schooling life, and then, you know, getting into the gang scene a little, you know, all the drugs and alcohol and all that, you know, that's obviously led you to your pathway that you're in now.
Yeah.
And all that, bro. So you want to touch on that as well and give that a shout out?
Yeah, bro. Shout out to Springboard, youth organization. Yeah, I became a youth worker, bro, because my passion is just to see young people succeed, bro. Like, I love seeing people in general succeed, but I didn't have the support. Well, I had the support. I was just blinded by everything else. And so my heart is to really just see young people find their potential and see their worth, because a lot of young people today struggle in New Zealand. So, bro, I just want to give them the opportunities that I never really got.
What are some of the, like, you know, with Springboard and all that, bro? Yeah. Like, what type of youth are you dealing with?
Stuff? So
just
we,
to give these guys context.
Yeah, we deal with youth that don't quite fit into mainstream schooling, the schooling system. We deal with young people that have anxiety, that struggle a bit with, I guess, also some of the rejection. But I think the biggest thing is just trying to find a place to belong.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to figure that out. And like I was when I was younger, I did some stuff that I wouldn't normally do to see, oh, is this for me type thing, you know? You know, you test the waters as a young person. Yeah, and we get youth that just need someone to walk alongside them, to guide them a little bit, eh? And, yeah, that's what I do with Springboard. We have an alternative education school, schooling going on as well. So that's more, we try and do more hands-on learning because we understand that not everyone fits in that mainstream. And hands-on learning is definitely our kids' thing. They like to tutu with their hands and, you know, get up to no good sometimes, but we love them. They get under your skin, but, you know, when you work months and months on end just to see them smile at the end of the year, bro, it's all worth it. And to actually, for them to just click and be like, oh, I'm actually good at this.
Yeah.
When they've been told their whole life, you're useless, you're this and that. And I feel like there's also just some kids that parents work too much, bro. So for them, love is like materialistic things. Giving you money, and then some of them are like, hey, I'll get in trouble to get my mum and dad's attention because, you know, they have to come.
Yeah.
They're my guardian, so they have to come. And all they want, bro, is just, how was your day? How are you going? You know, they don't care too much about the money and this and that. Some of them do, but, you know, everyone's different.
I think a lot of them, they just want that love, eh? That you're preaching, bro. And I wouldn't say attention, but... Yeah, more the love, eh?
Yeah, that's just, it.
Yeah, acknowledgement that someone's there for them.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And just for them to know that, you know, no matter what I go through, there's someone walking alongside me.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that we're able to do that as an organization, that we're able to walk alongside young people to help them succeed or help them realize their potential of what they're good at, what things they thrive in. To see them just have a positive future for themselves, because a lot of them don't see it.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't see the good in them. You know, a lot of them will do what they do to try and impress people instead of actually doing the stuff they're good at, because everyone else is doing it, so why not? So it's just that belonging, bro. A lot of young people are just looking for a place to belong, bro.
And obviously you cover a pretty... big area as well.
The Rodney area.
And you go all the way up to...
Tihana,
yeah. Bro. So that's a big area, bro, you know, that you're covering, eh? And so, you know, I'm happy that you're part of that as well, bro. So, I mean, what's the plans for the future with all this?
Plans for the future, I'm hoping to one day open up my own community centre, more around the performing arts and also, like, athletes, because growing up, I've seen a lot of my mates... waste their talent, really. Like, people that had talent to really crack it but just got involved with the wrong people at the wrong time, and it just put them off, you know. So just seeing young people come into a place where they, one, feel supported, and two, where they know that yes, it's going to take some hard work to get to where they want to be, but they have the support behind them. And just to get them and their families to where they, you know, to where they want to be, because no matter how good or bad the environment is, I know a lot of these young people still have so much love for their parents, no matter what their parents put them through, bro. And I just want to see that connection with families and them just come together.
Wicked, bro. And you obviously got a little side gig going on at the moment.
Yeah, bro.
Let's give that a little shout out, bro. Yeah, get a bit of business. Mario.
Here's home renovation. Should probably get a business card, bro.
You should. Bro, let's give that a little shout out, man, because it's cool what you're doing there too.
So I just started, it was about 2 weeks ago now, I started Safari Boxing. And just the vision behind that is really to stay connected, bro. Just even in these times, unprecedented times, you know, like, everyone's unsure, everyone's got different opinions. But for me, I'm just like, love one another, bro. Yeah. So for me, it's just to stay connected. And it's helped with my mental health as well, to feel somewhat normal with being around people and stuff, because that's where I get my, like, energy from, is being around people and stuff. Yeah, so I started that 2 weeks ago, and holding, so it's around boxing, holding pads for people and that sort of thing. And I've got, I think it's about 10 clients now consistently, nice. Which has been a blessing. But you know what they say, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So it's, you know, having that, you know,
Amen.
Being blessed by that, but it's also learning how to keep that momentum and keeping it fresh for these people that are coming consistently. So not going to get too excited, but I am excited of the journey that I'm on at the moment because, you know, even at work, I'm like, to our young people, you can start a business and stuff, but here I am like, nah, gee, that's not all good. That's
I don't people are scared of taking risks, you know?
Like, bro, you can start a business. Yeah. Well, you do. I'm all good. But I was like, hey, I'm just going to put myself out there. And myself being big as well, that was in the back of my mind being like, nah, these guys aren't going to, you know, I'm not going to get any responses because they're going to look at me and be like, this guy wants to PT someone. He looks like a damn Big Mac.
Yeah.
You know, like himself.
Big Daddy V. Yeah.
But Big Daddy Safari boxing out there. But nah, but I think a lot of my clients appreciate the fact that I'm on the journey with them, bro.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. Because obviously training myself to get to where I want to be, I've set some goals for myself as well. And I think they appreciate that, bro, is that that's what we connect with is good yarns, but also the fact that I'm on a journey myself and they appreciate that, that I'm on that journey. They feel like I'm on that journey with them, you know. They don't feel like I'm above them or anything like that. It's just like we're together in this and we're on a journey.
Awesome, man. And it's obviously, I think we better... Maybe a little shout out to Richie as well for helping you out and setting that up, bro.
Humble
Kings right there.
Humble Kings.
Yeah. So man, he's talented with the way he goes about, you know, business and all that, bro.
And
so
he just has the mind for it, eh? He's doing what he's doing. And that's right. Mad shout out to him, bro. He's helped me heaps, set up a website for me and everything. And I was like, bro, can we have a call?
Yeah.
I don't understand it, bro. You know, it was a little bit of a panic. I was like, oh, how do I do this stuff?
Yeah.
But nah, he was real good, man. We had a good conversation 2 weeks ago now. And he just took me through it step by step and how people can book. So, book on my Instagram.
Yeah, bro, give it a little shout out, man.
Safari Boxing, Safari_Boxing, Auckland. And there's a link there if you want to book sessions or anything like that. So holla at me if you want to go on this little journey that we're on at the moment. Yeah.
That's the one, bro. Well, also, man, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Appreciate it also.
Nah, man, I appreciate it too. Yeah. Man, with your business, your little side gig, with obviously Springboard as well.
Yeah.
Man, wish you nothing but you know, success.
Appreciate it.
And you know, all the love to you, my bro.
Appreciate it, my brother. Cha-cha, ay, cha-cha, ay, ra-ta-ta-ta-ta, shandala.